Bleak House by Charles Dickens, dramatized in 8 episodes by Betty Davis, with Michael Bryant, Sarah Kestelman, Robert Lang, and Brenda Blethyn as Esther Summerson. Part 3, The Veiled Lady.
Richard very often came to see us while we remained in London, and with his good spirits, his gaiety and freshness, was always delightful. But the better I knew him, the more I felt how much it was to be regretted that he had been educated in no habits of application and concentration. He dashed through his tasks, always with fair credit and often with distinction, but in a fitful, dazzling way that confirmed his reliance on those very qualities it was most desirable to direct and train. I thought often how right my guardian was, and that the uncertainties and delays of the Chancery suit had imparted to Richard's character something of the careless spirit of a gamester. He had picked up medicine, much as he might have picked up a card at the table, and was all too soon ready to put it down again. And how do you get on with your studies at Mr. Bay and Badger's, Richard?
Oh, well enough.
Well enough?
Yes, it's all rather jog-trotty and humdrum, but it'll do as well as anything else. After all, it may only be a kind of probation until our suit is decided.
Richard.
Oh, I forgot. I'm not to mention the suit, am I? Forbidden ground. Yes, it'll do well enough. Let's talk about something else.
No, Esther, can't. No. Think how important it is to you both. We must talk about it soon. It'll be too late.
Oh, yes, we must talk about it. But I think Richard is right.
Richard, Mr. and Mrs. Bay and Badger were here yesterday, and they seemed disposed to think that you had no great liking for the profession.
Did they indeed? Well, that alters things.
How?
Well, I didn't want to disappoint them. I had no idea they'd guess how I felt.
Oh, then they're right.
The fact is, I don't take to it. It's so monotonous. Today's like yesterday, and tomorrow will be like today.
But that applies to everything, to life itself, except under uncommon circumstances.
Well, if it applies to everything, this profession will do well enough, as I said.
Richard, if you don't think of your own future, you must think of Ada's. If you are to be married...
Dear Dame Durden, that's the very thing. I've thought about Ada very often. I love you so much, my darling cousin, and I know I should settle down, but it's all such uphill work, and it takes such a time.
Maybe that's because you don't like what you're doing. Have you thought of anything else, anything you might like better?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I have.
What is it?
I think the law is the thing for me.
The law?
Yes. If I went into Kenge and Carboy's office, I should have my eye on the case. Forbidden ground or no, I'd like to study it and to be sure it isn't being neglected. I could watch Ada's interests as well as my own, and I'd peg away like anything at Blackstone and the rest of them.
Are you sure of this?
Esther, I made a mistake. Well, we all make mistakes, but I'd really work at the law.
Then you must speak to Mr. Jarndyce straight away.
So, that's the truth of it, sir.
Mm.
But maybe it isn't worthwhile to make a disturbance about nothing in particular.
Rick, this affects your whole life. This is your future. We can retreat with honor still, and we will.
Ah, then it is the law.
But we must be careful for Ada's sake that we make no more such mistakes. So, we'll look before we leap and take plenty of time about it.
Then you're not going to speak to Ken?
Not immediately, Rick, no. You must soldier on at the Bay and Badgers for a while and be absolutely certain of your own mind first. And speaking of that, isn't it time you went back, or do they keep late hours?
No, they don't. And I promised Mrs. Bay and Badger I wouldn't be late. I had thought I could be articled to Kenge and Carboy straight away.
Oh,
but you know best, sir. Good night. And thank you.
Good night, Rick. I have no doubt that Ada will see you downstairs.
Good night, Esther.
Good night.
The law.
Really?
Mm. I could wish Richard's inclinations had not turned in that direction. But if he's in earnest... Oh, I hope he doesn't think too much of that accursed Chancery suit.
I'm afraid he does think of it a little, Guardian.
Oh,
yeah. Ada will be distressed if we seem to criticize him.
I know.
Cousin John?
Yes, my love.
I hope you don't think worse of Richard.
No, of course not. This is nothing. He's got time before him and his race to run. I certainly don't think the worse of him, and I'll swear you don't.
I couldn't think ill of Richard if the whole world did. Indeed, then, I think better of him than I ever did before.
It must be written somewhere that the virtues of the mothers are sometimes visited on the children, as well as the sins of the fathers. Hmm? It's getting late. Time to go to our beds. Good night, my rosebud. Happy dreams. Oh, Esther.
Oh, Guardian, I didn't think you'd still be up. I came down for some silk. I've been working at my embroidery.
So late, my dear.
I couldn't sleep. I wish to tire myself, but you're late, too. You look weary.
Oh.
I hope you have no trouble to keep you waking.
None, little woman, that you would understand. Oh, but stay here for a moment. I was thinking of you.
Oh. I hope I wasn't the trouble.
Oh, no, never. But since I've been sitting here, it came to me that you ought to know something of your own history. All I know, that is, and indeed that is very little.
But when I spoke to you before about it...
I know, you said there was nothing you wished to ask me. But now I have decided that whether you ask or no, I have something I wish to tell you. I think it's my duty.
Then if you think so, it must be right.
My dear, I do think so. If in anyone's eyes a disadvantage can attach to your parentage, you yourself must not magnify it by having only a vague impression of its nature.
One of my earliest memories is of something my godmother said on my birthday.
What was that?
Your mother, Esther, is your disgrace, and you are hers.
Oh.
The time will come when you will understand this, as only a woman can.
Oh, dear. Oh. 9 years ago, Esther, I received a letter from a lady living in seclusion. It was unlike any other letter I've ever read. It was written with such stern passion and such power. She told me of a child, an orphan girl, in her care. Oh, she told me in words as cruel as those you remember. She had bred the child in secrecy from her birth and blotted out all trace of her existence. She asked me, if she died before the child became a woman, to take over the charge that she had begun, for the little girl would be left friendless, nameless, and unknown. I do not need to explain to you the distorted religion that clouded your godmother's mind, making her fancy the child must expiate an offense of which she was quite innocent. I felt concerned for the little creature, and so I accepted.
Oh, I'll never cease to be grateful for that.
Oh, your godmother insisted that she and I should never meet. She told me that the name she went under was assumed. She was, she said, your aunt. Ah. Now, I've told you all. I saw my ward more often than she saw me. She repays me 1,000 times every day.
And more often than that, she blesses the guardian who is like a father to her. What is it?
Nothing. Take a fatherly good night, my dear, and so to rest.
That night, at last, I slept. I had been sleepless and rather low-spirited. I don't know why. At least, perhaps I do, but it doesn't matter. Alan Woodcourt was a frequent visitor to our lodgings, and the following day he called with his mother to take leave of us. He was going to China and to India as a surgeon on board ship. He was to be away a long, long time.
I could wish that I didn't have to leave England, Miss Summerson, but we have not the means for me to continue in practice here. If only I could last another 3 years, I think I might survive, but that, I fear, is not possible.
Our family, Miss Summerson, goes back to Morgan ap Kerry, Prince of North Wales. Alan has royal blood in his veins, but we have not prospered in recent years. Oh, dear, no.
Mother...
I have told Alan that he must remember his pedigree and on no account form an alliance beneath it.
But you spoke of royal blood. Do you mean...
Well, perhaps that is too much to hope for. But there are many handsome English ladies in India. Ladies of good family, ladies with property. I have told Alan he must remember that wealth and beauty are not enough. There must be birth, too. Birth is important for a direct descendant of Morgan ap Kerrig.
Mr. Jarndyce, I called to thank you and these two ladies for the many happy hours, the many very happy hours that I've spent here. I shall always treasure their memories.
I'm so, I promise you, will we? Won't we, my dears?
Indeed.
We gave him our hands, and he put his lips to Ada's hand, and to mine, and went away on his long, long voyage. I was very busy all next day, and found much to occupy me. I was working at my embroidery when, very unexpectedly, Caddy Jellyby came to call.
Why, Caddy, we're so glad to see you.
Oh, what beautiful flowers.
Oh, yes. They're the loveliest I ever saw.
Are they from the young man you mentioned?
No, not from him.
Oh, then you must have two lovers.
Do they look like that sort of thing?
Indeed, they do. Oh, Caddy, tell us, who gave them to you?
No one. They're not mine.
Not yours?
They're yours, Esther. They were left behind by somebody at poor Miss Flight's. Left for you. Somebody who's been very good to her and was hurrying away to catch a ship.
Do they look like that sort of thing?
Yes, indeed, they do, Dame Durden. They look very like it, indeed.
Why, Caddy, was that the reason for your visit this afternoon? Oh, how kind of you. I'm sure Mr. Woodcourt would not have...
No, no, I would have called upon you anyway. You see, I have something to tell you.
You look so serious. What can it be?
I am engaged.
Oh, Caddy, I'm so glad.
So pleased for you.
Oh. Is it the young man you spoke of last time you visited us, Mr.
Turveydrop? Mm. Prince Turveydrop. Old Mr. Turveydrop called him that after the Prince Regent, whom he greatly admired. I wish he hadn't. Prince sounds so like a dog. But it's done now, and I forget how old it sounds, because my darling child... I call him my darling child. I hope you don't think me foolish.
Of course we don't.
He's so good, and works so hard, and is so kind to his old father, that now Prince seems to me the best name in the world.
Mm. And what do your parents say?
Yes. Well, they don't know.
You mean you got engaged without their knowledge and consent?
Gracious! How else could I get engaged? You know what Ma is. And as for Pa, poor Pa, he's dreadfully unhappy. Why should I make him more miserable? Oh, Esther, I shall never hear of Africa after I'm married. That's a great comfort.
I urged her again to talk to her parents, but she would not be persuaded. However, when she left us, she looked very thoughtful, and I had hopes that she might reconsider the matter. Richard, now he was free to change course, wasn't at all sure that he wanted to. He vacillated between medicine and the law to a degree that disturbed us all very much. But after several months, he finally chose the law. Thus, it was the midsummer term before he separated from Mr. Bayham Badger and went into the office of Messrs. Kenge and Carboy. Once he was settled, our long-postponed visit to Mr. Boythorn could take place. We had a pleasant coach ride down to Lincolnshire, in the agreeable company of Mr. Skimpole, and late in the summer afternoon came to a little village with a church spire and a marketplace and a pond with an old horse cooling his legs in it. Mr. Boythorn was waiting for us by the inn with an open carriage to take us the rest of the way.
By heaven, that was a most infamous coach. An abominable public vehicle. Ooh. It was 25 minutes after its time the coachman ought to be put to death.
Was he after his time? Well, you know my infirmity, Boythorn. I've no idea of money and no idea of time.
25 minutes with two ladies in the coach. Oh, yeah. And ladies. Ladies, I fear I'm obliged to conduct you nearly 2 miles out of the way, for our direct road lies through Sir Leicester Dedlock Park. And I have sworn not to set my foot, or on this occasion let my horse set his hoof, on that fellow's property until matters are settled between us.
Ah, good afternoon, Mr. Rumpwell.
Good afternoon.
Who is that young man?
He's the grandson of Sir Leicester's housekeeper, and he's in love with a pretty girl in service at Chesney Woods. Lady Dedlock has taken a fancy to the pretty girl, and is going to keep her as a personal maid, an honour which my young friend does not at all appreciate. Nor does Lady Dedlock's French maid, who's been given her notice in consequence.
Are they to be married, then, that young man and the pretty girl?
No, he cannot marry just yet, so he must make the best of the situation. In the meantime, he comes here as often as he can to fish. He says,
I suppose we may set foot in the park while we're here, or does your prohibition extend to us?
Oh, I lay no prohibition upon my guests. I'm only sorry I can't be your escort about Chesney Wold. It's a very fine place. But if you call upon the owner, you're likely to have a cool reception. He carries himself like an 8-day clock at all times. But I promise you, he'll have some extra stiffness for his neighbor's friend.
Oh, I shan't put him to the proof. We won't go near the house.
I'm glad to hear it. It's in better keeping. And here they think me a second Ajax defying the lightning. When I go into the little church on a Sunday, I vow the congregation expect to see me drop scorched and withered under the Dedlock displeasure. And I've no doubt that he's surprised I don't too.
The following Sunday, we all attended church. The congregation was extremely small and quite rustic, apart from a large muster of servants from the house. Among them, a very pretty girl, whom I guessed must be the maid of whom Mr. Boythorn had told us. A stir in the church, and a blandly ferocious assumption on Mr. Boythorn's part of being unconscious of somebody's existence, told me that the great people had come. Shall I ever forget the rapid beating of my heart as I met those handsome, proud eyes? They seemed to spring out of their languor as they looked at me. Only for a moment did I hold that gaze. Then I cast my eyes down, released, if I may say so. But in that moment, I knew that beautiful face quite well. I had never seen Lady Dedlock before. I was sure of it. But there was a strange memory associated with the lonely days at my godmother's house, even of the times when I stood on tiptoe to dress myself at my little glass. The service ended, and the congregation dispersed. But her face remained in my memory. Why was it like a broken glass to me, in which I saw scraps of old remembrances? And why should I be so troubled by it? Every day of the next week was so bright and blue that it was delightful to wander in the woods. One week after we arrived, however, the weather broke, and we had to take refuge in the keeper's lodge.
Oh, my dear fellow, I apologize for this intrusion, but these ladies have been caught in the storm. Is it possible to shelter here in the porch till it subsides?
Certainly, sir. One moment. Mary, I'll bring some chairs for the young
ladies. Oh, that's very kind.
Here's another.
Thank you.
And you, sir, would you...
Oh, no, thank you.
I'll leave the door open. The weather, she's so close.
Oh, a magnificent spectacle. When viewed from a safe shelter.
It's too dangerous. It's so exposed.
Oh, no, Esther, dear.
I did not speak. I am sorry. I have frightened you. I believe I have the pleasure of speaking to Mr. Jarndyce.
I'm honored by Lady Dedlock's remembrance.
I recognized you in church on Sunday. I'm sorry that a local dispute not of Sir Leicester's seeking makes it difficult to show you any attention here. The situation is absurd.
Please, I know the circumstances. I understand the difficulty.
You wrote to Sir Leicester about a young gentleman, a distant kinsman of mine. Sir Leicester was sorry not to have it in his power to help him. Is the young gentleman disposed of?
I hope so.
And is this your other ward?
This is Miss Clare, Lady Dedlock.
Lady Dedlock. Present me to this young lady also.
Miss Summerson really is my ward. I'm not responsible to the Lord Chancellor in her case.
Lady Dedlock. She is very fortunate in her guardian. It is a long time since we met, Mr. Jarndyce.
Yes. Oh, I'd
At least I thought it was a long time until I saw you in church last Sunday.
What? Even you are a courtier or think it necessary to become one to me? I suppose I've achieved that reputation.
You've achieved so much, Lady Dedlock, that I dare say you pay some penalty, but none to me.
So much, yes. I think you knew my sister better than me.
But perhaps we met more often.
We went our separate ways. We had little in common, I fear.
The messenger is coming back, my lady, with your carriage.
Ah, yes. Oh, but what's this? I only asked for Rosa. What now? Two of you?
The message was for your attendance, my lady. I'm still your maid. I have not yet left your service.
I was afraid you might mean me, my lady.
I did mean you, child. Put that shawl over my shoulders.
My lady?
I am sorry we cannot renew our acquaintance, Mr. Jarndyce. I'll send the carriage back here for you and your horse.
Oh, no, no, Lady Dedlock, you're kind. But it isn't necessary. The storm is over. We shall enjoy the walk back.
Very well. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Lady Dedlock.
Come, Rosa. I shall want you.
Yes, my lady.
Mistress Hortense, would you like to leave those wraps here, as her ladyship didn't need them?
No. I shall carry them back.
Is that young woman mad?
Well,
why, she's taken her shoes off. The grass is sodden. Who is she?
Hortense was my lady's maid. She's under notice because her ladyship prefers Rosa.
Ah.
But no, sir, she's not one of that sort. She has as good a headpiece as the best, but she's mortal high and passionate. And she don't take kindly to being given notice and having others put above her.
But why should she walk shoeless through all that rain?
To cool her down, perhaps.
Unless she fancies it's blood. She'd as soon walk through that as anything else when her own's up.
Indeed. Well, thank you for your shelter.
Oh, I know. It was most kind.
Oh, no.
Come, my dears.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Miss Summerson. There's a young woman waiting to see you in the breakfast room.
To see me?
Yes, miss. She said she wanted to speak to you privately. She didn't give her name.
Oh, thank you. I don't know who it can be.
Oh. Mademoiselle, I have taken a great liberty in coming here, but perhaps you will be amiable enough to excuse me.
No excuse is necessary. You wish to speak to me?
Yes. A thousand thanks for the permission, Mademoiselle. I have left my lady. We could not agree. My lady is so high, so very high.
I really do.
Pardon, Mademoiselle. You are right. It is not for me to complain of my lady.
Go on, if you please.
Assuredly, mademoiselle. I wish to find service with a young lady who is good, accomplished, and beautiful as an angel. Could I have the honor of being your domestic?
I'm sorry.
But don't dismiss me yet. Let me hope a moment. I know the service would be more retired. I wish that. I know it would be less distinguished. I wish that. I know I should receive less in wages. I am content.
But I keep no maid.
Mademoiselle, why not? When you can have one devoted to you. I wish with all my heart to serve you. Oh, don't speak of money. Take me as I am for nothing.
What?
If you accept my service, you will not regret it. And I will serve you well. You do not know how well.
Oh, I'm sorry, but it is quite impossible. I have no maid. I have no establishment. I act as housekeeper for my guardian, and I would not ask such a thing of him. I'm sorry.
Mademoiselle, I have received my answer. I am sorry of it, but I must go elsewhere and seek what I have not found here. I fear I surprised you on the day of the storm.
You surprised us all.
I took an oath, Mademoiselle, and I wish to stamp it on my mind so that I might keep it faithfully. And I will. Adieu.
There was a lowering energy in her that seemed to bring before me some woman from the streets of Paris at the time of the Reign of Terror. I did not think it necessary to tell her how little I wished to have her about me. We had 6 pleasant weeks with Mr. Boythorn, and then we returned to Bleak House. Not long afterwards, I travelled up to London to meet Caddy Jellyby, for she had thought again about the advisability of telling her mother that she was to be married, and she wished for my support. I had engaged to meet Richard, too, before I returned to Hertfordshire.
We walked in Lincoln's Inn Fields, and I asked him how he progressed with Kenge and Carboy. Are you beginning to feel more settled now?
I'm right enough.
But settled?
How do you mean, settled?
Settled in the law.
Oh, yes. I'm right enough.
You said that before.
And you don't think it's an answer, eh? No, perhaps it isn't. You mean, am I settling down?
Yes.
Oh, I can't say I am. One can't settle down while this business remains in such an unsettled state. I'm talking about the forbidden subject, you know.
Will it ever be in a settled state?
Oh, yes. Not the least doubt of it. Oh, Esther, I wish to heaven I were a more constant sort of a fellow.
Richard, you don't mean...
No, I'm constant to Ada. I love her dearly, more and more each day. I mean, constant to myself. It's difficult to express, but if I were more constant, I'd have held on either to Badger or to Kenge and Carboy like grim death. I wouldn't be in debt.
Are you in debt?
Yes, a little so. And I've rather taken too much to billiards and that sort of thing. You despise me, Esther.
You know I don't.
You're kinder to me than I am to myself. How can I be more settled? If you lived in an unfinished house, you couldn't settle down in it. I was born into this unfinished contention with all its chances and changes, and it's unsettled me all my life. Oh, I'm a worthless fellow to love my cousin Ada.
Richard, you are not worthless. You are good. And Ada's love may make you better.
I know, my dear. I know all that. Although I love Ada devotedly, that doesn't help me.
Richard.
However, it can't last forever. One day there'll be a judgment in our favor, and then you'll see. I've worked at Jarndyce and Jarndyce like a galley slave. Believe me, we're bound to win, but...
But?
Oh, I've no more enthusiasm for the law left now, Esther. I've satisfied myself I shouldn't like it. So what do I naturally turn my thoughts to?
I can't imagine.
Why? The army, of course. Come in, my dears. Come in. We must have a talk. All of us.
Yes, Captain John.
Rick and I have been discussing his future, and we're not quite of one mind.
You're very hard on me, sir. And before, you've always been so kind.
I must do my duty, Rick. Ada, are you afraid of what's coming?
I'm not afraid if it's to come from you.
Good. Rick has now chosen his profession for the last time. When he's fully equipped for the army and his commission has been granted, he'll have spent all he has. He's exhausted all his resources.
My present resources, certainly, but that's not all I will have.
But Rick, for the love of God, don't base your hopes on the family curse. Better to borrow, better to beg, better to die.
Sir.
Enough of that. All Richard has is ventured now. Ada, I've told him that for your sake and his own, there should be no contract between you. I ask you to relinquish, for the present, any tie but your relationship.
You mean you've renounced all confidence in me and you're asking Ada to do the same?
No, I do not mean that.
You think I've begun badly. I have, I know.
How I hoped you'd begin and go on, I've told you long ago. You haven't made that beginning yet. But there's a time for all things, and yours has not gone by. You two are cousins. As yet, nothing more. And you're both very young. What may come must come when it is worked out, and no sooner.
You're very hard on me, sir.
I am harder on myself. This is the best way.
Why? You didn't say so when we first told you we loved each other.
I've had experience since. I don't blame you, Rick. But I've had experience since of me, of both of you. The time to pledge yourselves to each other has not yet come, and I must recognize that.
Cousin Richard, I think no choice is left us. You may be easy in your mind about me. I am in Cousin John's care, and when you go away to follow your new calling, you can be sure that I am well and safe. I know you're very fond of me. I don't think you'll fall in love with anyone else. But I'd like you to be happy. And if... Cousin Richard, I am not at all changeable. But if your affections changed, I would never blame you.
Ada, how can you...
So, we are cousins again. For the time being, perhaps. And I pray for a blessing on my dear cousin wherever he goes.
From this moment, Richard was never as free and open with Mr. Jarndyce as he'd been before. He could not forgive his cousin for judging him exactly as he had judged himself. Ada stayed at Bleak House while Mr. Jarndyce and I accompanied Richard to London, where he bought a variety of things and plunged enthusiastically into preparations for his new career. These preparations included fencing lessons from a soldier, a fine, bluff-looking man whom everyone called Mr. George.
Good morning, Mr. George. Mr. Carston will be here directly. Meanwhile, Miss Summerson is very happy to meet you, I know.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, miss.
You're
as punctual as the sun.
Military time, sir. Force of habit. I'm not at all business-like.
Yet you have a large establishment, so I'm told.
I keep a shooting gallery, yes, but not much of a one.
And what kind of a shot and what kind of a swordsman do you make of Mr. Carston?
Pretty good. Very good, if he was to give his full mind to it.
Doesn't he?
He did it first, but not afterwards.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
Perhaps he has something else on his mind. Some young lady.
Oh, don't look at me, Mr. George. I assure you, I'm not on his mind.
No offence, I hope, miss.
Oh, none at all. I took it as a compliment.
I beg your pardon, sir, but you did mention the young lady's name.
Miss Summerson.
Summerson?
Do you know the name?
No, miss. Never heard it. But, I thought I'd seen you somewhere before.
I don't think so. I remember faces very well.
So do I, miss.
Have you many pupils, Mr. George?
A few, sir. All sorts at the shooting gallery. Gentlemen and apprentices. I have had French women come before now and show themselves dabs at pistol shooting.
Yes.
And mad people out of number.
No one with a grudge, I hope.
It has happened. I beg your pardon, sir, but I believe you're a chancery suitor.
To my sorrow.
I've had one of your compatriots in my time. Name of Gridley.
Gridley?
The man from Shropshire.
Yes, do you know him?
We have met, yes. I was sorry to learn that his state of mind has got him into trouble again.
I heard he was in hiding.
Yes, so I've been told.
You don't know where?
No, sir. He'll be worn out soon, I fear. You can file a strong man's heart away for a good many years, but it'll tell all of a sudden at last.
And Mr. George shakes his handsome, grizzled head. But now he has looked at Esther once more and forgotten Mr. Gridley. Her face stays in his mind, posing a question he cannot answer throughout the fencing lesson, so that he, like Richard, is not giving the matter in hand his full attention. But when he leaves the house and strides purposefully away on his next errand, Esther's face surely is no longer in his thoughts, for he frowns as if he's contemplating something rather less agreeable. He makes for an ill-favored, ill-savored neighborhood which belies its name, Mount Pleasant. Here, in a dark little basement parlor, a grim, hard, uncouth parlor, seated on two black horsehair chairs, one each side of the fireplace, he finds a venerable couple, grandfather and grandmother Smallweed.
Oh, it's you, is it, Mr. George? How do you do?
Middling well, thank you.
And how does the world use you?
Like a football.
You rub your legs to rub life into them.
Why, it's partly a habit, but it helps the circulation.
Not much of that, I should think.
Truly, I'm old, but I can carry my years. I'm older than her. See what she is. And your brimstone chatterer.
Don't scold the old lady. Unlucky old soul. Think of your mother, Mr. Smallweed, if your wife ain't enough.
I suppose you were an excellent son.
No, I wasn't. I was a thundering bad son, but the least said about that, the better. Here's your new bill, and here's the 2 months' interest money. And a devil and all of a scrape I had to get it together. It's all correct. You needn't be afraid to order the pipe.
Here it is. See directly to the pipe and glass of cold brandy and water for Mr. George.
But it's Charlie to bring it.
How do you occupy yourself sitting there all day?
I watch the fire and the boiling and the roasting.
When there is any.
Just so.
Don't you read?
We've never been readers in our family. Folly. Stop. It don't pay.
You'll sell me off at last, I suppose, when I'm a day in arrears.
Oh, never, my dear friend. But my friend in the city that I got to lend you the money, he might.
Oh, you think he might be hard on me, eh?
Oh, I'm afraid he would. I've known him to do it 20 times.
20 pounds.
20 pounds. You're a chattering broomstick waster. Ought to be burned. Here's your pipe. Your brand new.
Thank you. Thank you, my dear. Who's that little girl? She hasn't got the family face.
Charlie. She worked here.
Yeah, she's a pretty little thing. I take it I'm the only man alive that gets the value of a pipe out of you.
You made the pipe a condition.
Not for the value of it. I wanted to get something for my money.
Ah, you're a prudent man. Hadn't you no relations who'd pay off this little principle?
If I had, I shouldn't trouble them.
If you could have traced the captain, it would have been the making of you. When you first came here, in consequence of our advertisement in the newspapers, when I say our, I mean my friend in the city, if you could have helped us then, it would have been the making of you.
I was willing enough to be made then, but now I'm glad I wasn't.
Why?
Two reasons. In the first place, you gentlemen took me in. The advertisement said that Captain Ordner had something to his advantage.
Well?
It wouldn't have been to his advantage to be clapped into jail.
How do you know? Some of his rich relatives might have paid his debts. He owed us immense sums all round.
I don't need to be told that he carried on heavily and ruined himself. I was at his side many a day when he was charging at ruin full gallop. I laid this hand upon him when he'd run through everything. I held a pistol to his head.
I wish he'd let it off.
Anyway, he'd been young, hopeful and handsome in the days gone by. I'm glad I never found him when he was none of those things to lead to a result so much to his advantage. That's the first reason.
What's the other? Oh, you think he's dead?
I'm convinced of it. I'm sure he was drowned. Went over a ship's side long ago.
No, my dear friend, no.
Tell your granddaughter to take care of this pipe for 2 months. That'll save you the cost of one next time. Good afternoon, Mr. Small.
It is the long vacation in the regions of Chancery Lane. The courts are all shut up. The public offices lie in a hot sleep. The Bar of England is scattered over the face of the earth. Over all the legal neighborhood, the idleness and pensiveness of the season hang like some gigantic cobweb. Mr. Snagsby, law stationer, is sensible of the influence, but today all has been bustle at Cook's Court, for the Snagsbys are entertaining guests. Mr. Chadband, a large yellow man with a fat smile, who is, as he expresses it, in the ministry, though attached to no particular denomination, and his wife, a stern-looking, silent woman.
My friend, peace be on this house. And what is peace? Is it war? No. Is it strife? No. Is it lovely and gentle and beautiful and joyful? Oh, yes. Therefore, my friends, I wish for peace upon you and upon yours.
Amen.
My friends, what is this we now behold? Refreshment. Do we need refreshment then, my friends? We do. And why do we need refreshment, my friends? Because we are but mortal. Because we are of the earth. because we are not of the air. Can we fly, my friend? We cannot. Why can we not fly?
No wings?
We cannot fly because we are calculated to walk. Could we walk without strength? We could not. We derive the strength that is necessary to our limbs from bread in various forms, from butter, which is churned, from the milk yielded to us by the cow, from the eggs laid by the fowl, from ham, from tongue, from sausage, and such like. So let us partake of the good things set before us.
You want it downstairs, Mr. Snagsby?
Oh, then perhaps this good company would excuse me.
Why, yes, my good sir.
Who is it, Buster?
It's a policeman.
A policeman? Dear me. Bless my heart, officer. What's the matter?
This boy, sir. Father told him to move on. And he won't.
I'm always a-moving on, sir. Ever since I was born. Where can I move to more nor I do move?
He won't move on, though he's been repeatedly cautioned.
But where? But really, Constable, that does seem a question.
My instructions don't go to that, sir. My instructions is the boy has to move on. Do you know him? He says that how you do.
No, he don't.
My love, permit me. Yes, Constable, I do know something of the lad, and I can't say there's any harm in it. His name is Joe. He's a crossing sweeper, and he gave evidence at the inquest on an unfortunate law writer. Now, dear.
Well, sir, he spoke the truth, then. When I took him into custody in Holborn, he said he knew you, and a young man in the crowd said as you were a respectable citizen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, here is that young man
now. Oh, Mr. Guppy. I thought it was right what the boy said should be looked into. Quite right. I'm obliged to you.
Boy, you said you lived in Tom All Alone's. Oh, that's a nice, innocent place to live, that is.
I can't afford no nicer.
Very poor, are you?
Yes, sir.
I leave you to judge, gentlemen. I took this half crown off him.
Oh, that's what's left from a sovereign that was given me by a lady in a whale.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she said she was a servant, and she asked to be shown the house what him as you give the writing to lived in, and the grave what he's buried in. But I took it there, and she gave me a sovereign, and hooked it. And I ain't had much of a sovereign neither. They took 5 bob at Tom All Alone before they'd change it. And a young man, he took another 5 while I was asleep. And the landlord, he stood drinks all round on it.
You don't expect anyone to believe that, do you?
I don't know, sir. It's the truth, though.
Mr. Snagsby, if I don't lock him up this time, will you engage for him moving on?
No, my little woman, be patient. That comes to me. I've no doubt he'll move on. Joe, you really must, you know. Oh, I'm every way agreeable, sir.
Do it, then. The sooner the better for all parties. Goodbye, sir.
Mr. Guppy, would you care to come upstairs and take tea with us?
Well, I'd like to have a word with the boy first, Mr. Snagsby. This is as queer a story as I've ever heard.
We'll take him upstairs, too. He looks starving to me.
No! Only to the doorway, my little woman. The boy can take a cup of tea and...
some ham.
Oh, sir. Well, his sixth story like cobbler's wax. There's something there that beats anything that came my way at Kenjin Carboys.
Kenjin Carboys?
You've heard of them, Mrs. Chadbourne.
I have known of them for years, before I married Mr. Chadbourne.
Was you a party in anything, then?
No.
Well, perhaps he was acquainted with somebody who was a party to something, then?
No.
Well, was it a lady of your acquaintance who had some transactions with Kenjin Carboy, or a gentleman of your acquaintance?
Neither.
Oh, a child?
You've got it at last, sir. Oh. I was in charge of a child named Esther Summerson, who was put out in life by Mrs. Kenjin Carboy.
Miss Summerson?
I called her Esther Summerson. There was no missing of the girl in my time. I was housekeeper to her godmother, who died. Then I believe a Mr. Jarndyce became her guardian.
Mrs. Chadbourne, allow me to shake your hand.
May this house live upon the fat of the land. May it grow. May it prosper. May it thrive.
Amen. I must be getting back, Mr. Snagsby. Thank you for the tea. That was very welcome. And by the way, I wanted to speak to you about a friend of mine.
name of Weevil.
Yes?
Yeah, he's moving to Crook's place. He's taking a room he was in, you know, the one that died. Weevil's the way of being in the law himself. Anything you'd have given to Nemo, you could perhaps try him out on, if you'd be so kind.
Indeed, I very well may. Thank you, Mr. Guppy. Thank you.
So Mr. Guppy hurries away to take the good news to his friend Mr. Weevil, whose real name is Jobling. In view of the circumstances in which he left his last employment, he deems it prudent to metamorphosize into Weevil. Joe is sent away with a blessing from Mr. Chadband, a reluctant ham sandwich from Mrs. Snagsby, and a furtive half-crown from Mr. Snagsby, who seizes the opportunity to slip away himself for a private word with that repository of secrets, Mr. Tulkinghorn. The lawyer says little, but he listens. He listens to every word, while an allegorical Roman sprawling among the clouds on his painted ceiling points accusingly downwards at poor Mr. Snagsby. The next evening, too, the Roman points at the law stationer, once more perched in respectful discomfort on Mr. Tulkinghorn's leather armchair.
Now, Snagsby, you told me yesterday that you would not mention your visit to your wife. That was prudent.
My little woman, not to put too fine a point on it, is inquisitive. She has an active mind, sir.
Therefore, you kept your visit to yourself, and tonight, too?
Tonight, too, sir. You had taken a sort of interest in the affair, and I thought perhaps you'd wish to hear the boy's story.
Quite so. Will you run over once more what he said?
Certainly, sir. He said a veiled lady who said she was a servant asked him to show her where Nemo lived and where he was buried. The boy did so, and she gave him a sovereign and disappeared.
Sovereign, eh?
Dear me, I didn't know there was another gentleman present.
Don't mind this gentleman. I wanted him to hear your story. What do you think of that, Bucket?
Well, sir, our people have moved the boy on. He's not to be found around here, so perhaps Mr. Snagsby wouldn't mind accompanying me to Tom All Alone's.
Mr. Bucket is a detective officer, Snagsby.
He indeed, sir.
If you've no real objection to accompanying him, I'd be grateful if you would.
Don't be afraid of hurting the boy. You won't do that. We only want to ask him a question or two, and he'll be paid for his trouble and sent away again.
Very well, since that's the case.
And looky here, Mr. Snagsby, you're a man of business and a man of the world, so it ain't necessary to say to you it's the best and wisest thing to keep a little matter like this quiet.
Certainly, certainly.
Then here's your hat, and if you're ready, I am. Good evening, Darby.
Good evening, sir.
Do us a favour of lending us your lantern and your company, too, if you will.
Sir.
Now, Mr. Snagsby, the constable will walk on one side of you and I'll stay on the other. I dare say you'll feel more comfortable that way in a neighbourhood like this.
It isn't very congenial, Mr. Bucket. What's the smell?
Stagnant water, Mr. Snagsby, among other things. Hold your nose, if you like. Crawl off a bit now. Here's the fever coming down the street. Are these the fever houses, Darby?
Yes, all of them. They've been carrying out dead and dying like sheep with the rot.
We can get on again. Mr. Snagsby, you look pale.
It's the air. The dreadful air.
Ah, this is the house, I think. We'll soon have him. Watch out for the rats as we go up the stairs.
Now, who've we got here tonight? Two drunken men, eh? And two women. Those men are sound asleep, I think. Are these your husbands, my dears?
Yes, sir.
Brickmakers, eh?
Yes, sir.
What are you doing here? You don't belong to London.
No, we belong to Hertfordshire, St. Albans.
Come up on the tramp?
We walked up yesterday. There's no work down there. We've not done much good by coming here.
Well, your good men aren't going the right way about finding work from the look of things.
No, sir. We know that full well.
The boy Joe's here, isn't he? The boy they call Tuffy.
What?
It's all right. I mean to do him a bit of good.
He's gone to get some medicine for Liz and for the child.
Why, what age you call that little creature? He looks as if he was born yesterday.
He's not 2 weeks old yet, sir.
Is he your child?
No. I'm the mother of one like it, Master, and it died. And better so. Much better to think of it dead than alive, Jenny. Much better.
Why, you ain't such an unnatural woman, I hope, as to wish her own child dead.
And why shouldn't she? Look around you at this place. Look at our men. Look at the boy you're waiting for. Think of the children that your business lays with often and often and that you see grow up.
Well, she must train him respectable. And he'll be a comfort to her and look after her in her old age.
I mean to try, sir. But think of all the things that will come his way. And if he should be turned bad, spite of all I can do, and he should be made hard and changed, isn't it likely I should wish he'd died as Jenny's child died?
Ah, that's him, isn't it? Will he do, Mr. Snagsby?
Yes, that's the boy. Well, I ain't done nothing.
It's only a job you'll get paid for, Joe. Don't worry.
Straight up.
Yes, my lad. Now, if you hand that good lady her medicine, you're a good boy to fetch it for her.
It's all to be took directly, doctor said.
Thank you.
Right. Now we're all ready for you, Mr. Snagsby. I dare say you won't be sorry to get back. Now, Joe, the gentleman who lives here, who's a lawyer, just wants to ask you a few questions concerning the lady you told me about. Nothing for you to worry over, my lad, and there'll be half a crown for you at the end of it. Here we are, and here's his door. No need to ring. I've got the key. In there.
Who's the lawyer?
Right you are. What's the matter?
Well, there she is.
Who?
Well, the lady. Well, there she is, standing there, whale and all.
How do you know that's the lady?
Well, I know the whale, and the bonnet, and the gown.
What about those rings you told me about?
Sparkling all over the ring.
Take off your glove. Now, Joe, what do you say to that?
Not rings like them. Not a hand like that. This is a deal whiter. Smaller, too.
Why, you'll tell me I'm my own mother next. Do you recollect the lady's voice?
Oh, I think I does.
Was it at all like this? I will speak as long as you like if you're not sure.
What?
Was it this voice? Or at all like this voice?
Not a bit.
Then why did you say it was the lady?
Because it's her clothes. It's her... And it isn't her. It ain't her head, nor her rings, nor her voice. Well, it's the whale and a bonnet and a gown, and it's the right what she was, and she give me a sovereign, and up's it.
Well, we haven't got much from you, have we? But here's 5 shillings. Take care how you spend it now.
Thank you, Mademoiselle Octos. I'll give you no further trouble about this little wager.
You will be kind enough to remember, sir, that I'm not at present placed.
Certainly.
A word from Mr. Falkinghorn is so powerful.
It shall not be wanted.
My devoted gratitude, sir. Good night.
Good night, madam.
Good night.
Well, that is.
It's all squared, you see? As I squared it myself, sir. There ain't a doubt. It was the other one. With this one's dress on.
In part 3 of Charles Dickens's Bleak House, dramatized in 8 episodes by Betty Davis, the part of Esther Summerson was played by Brenda Blessing, and Mr. Jarndyce by Michael Bryant. Richard, Andrew Sear, Ada, Maggie Wilkinson, Harold Skimpole, David Collins, Mr. Boythorn, Leslie Sands, Lady Dedlock, Sarah Kestelman, Mr. Tulkinghorn, Robert Lang, Hortense, Stella Forge, Inspector Bucket, Douglas Livingstone, Rosa, Nika Burns, Joe, Danny Webb, Jenny, Teresa Stretfield, Grandfather Smallweed, Patrick Troughton, Trooper George, Michael Graham Cox, Mr. Guppy, William Nye, Mr. Snagsby, Hugh Dixon, the Reverend Chadband, John Warner, Mrs. Chadband, Miriam Raymond, Caddy Jellyby, Suzanne Burden, Alan Woodcourt, Adam Barham, Mrs. Woodcourt, Margaret John, with Catherine Parr, Wendy Murray, Rosalind Adams, Steve Hodgson, and David Goodison, with Simon Cadell as Charles Dickens. The director was Jane Morgan.